Hey, this is Jamin Bradley, and you can tell that the recording today sounds a little different. That's because, unfortunately, what I used to record our sessions fell through, which is sad because we usually have a lot of really great discussion, especially this past week. Lots of great questions, lots of great observations, and a lot of great discussion time. But sadly, I was unable to record it, try to have it fixed in the future. Until then, I'm going to try to run through kind of what we talked about, just kind of recording here. So today we're talking about dreams. This is week two of Apollos, and we thought that we would really hit on dreams. And that's because it's really, if there's something that we can start off when we're talking about supernatural things, if there's something that we could all identify with, it's dreams. Now, some more than others, some actually have dreams that, of course, are like, really bizarre, and they dream all the time, while others really never dream. I actually know a few people who, like, seriously, when they look back throughout their life, they can really only remember, like, one dream they've ever had, which is sad. But, you know what, God works in our ways differently, and not every dream is, of course, supernatural. Because mostly, what you're told throughout your life is that dreams are your way, your brain's way of sorting things out, of filing and all these kind of things. And that's really the way most of us think about it, because they're so bizarre and so weird. How could they ever be anything different than that? So today, we'll address how dreams can be interpretive and how God can use them. And that's kind of what we'll be talking about. Now, this is actually, dreams are very visionary, of course, because you're seeing things. But I don't know if you're confused about visions, what visions are in general, because I always have been. Like, what is a vision? Like, if I were to have a vision, what would I see? What would go through my mind? Would I just be, like, standing there and all of a sudden go in a trance and my eyes would glaze over and everyone would know I'm having a vision? Or would I see, like, some supernatural, spiritual thing walk by me that no one else saw? Or would it just be something else? I don't know. But when you read the Bible, especially in Ezekiel, man, the things that this guy saw in visions are so similar to dreams because they're so confusing, like tires and eyes and they're on fire and it's just all these weird things. You want to read some bizarre visions, read Ezekiel sometimes, because this guy, his visions really make you think of dreams, which is essentially what dreams are. Hopefully you've downloaded the PDF and you're looking over it. But it says Apollos, unlock the biblical power of night visions. Because that's essentially what dreams are. They are visions, same kind of visions that you see, that you hear of throughout the Bible, except at night when you're sleeping. That's what's being downloaded to you at that point. So that's kind of what we're relating to, is visions, but of the night, and things that you're used to. You've at least had one dream you can relate to that you understand how it works. So I want to give you some biblical backing, though, of course, because a big point of Apollos is to really look biblically, how can we understand these things. So I want to take a look through the Bible and show you that dreams throughout history have been known to be something more than just your mind sorting things out. Genesis 23, and all these verses are on your Apollos PDF if you're looking at it. Genesis 23. Well, 20 and then 3. But God came to Abimelech in a dream of the night and said to him, "Behold, you are a dead man because of the woman whom you have taken, for she is married." So there you go. God warning someone in a dream about something they didn't even know. You can read the story, figure out what exactly you're talking about. Genesis 31:10. And it came about at the time when the flock were mating that I lifted up my eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the male goats which were mating were striped, speckled, and mottled, however you want to say that. Either way, this is another story in which God kind of gave some foresight as to sheep that Jacob was going to want to choose, what they would look like. And you can read the story to understand more, because it takes a while to explain it. Numbers 12:6. He said, "Hear now my words. If there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, shall make myself known to him in a vision. I shall speak with him in a dream." And there you go. You got dreams and visions kind of on the same page, again, relating them together. But you also have God saying he would make himself known in a dream. Now today, if God made yourself known, if God made himself known to you in a dream, you probably wouldn't think twice about it, because really dreams are thought today, just, it's scientific, there's nothing to it, nothing at all. 1 Kings 3:5, in Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream at night, and God said, ask what you wish me to give you. So there you go, God, he's given away things, and he's actually having a conversation that affects Solomon's future. He's having a conversation that actually affects Solomon within a dream. It's like interaction right there between God and Solomon within a dream. Job 33:14-16, and this one really makes you helps you to trust that dreams are a real thing that God uses. Indeed, God speaks once or twice, yet no one notices it. In a dream, a vision of the night, when sound sleep falls on men while they slumber in their beds, when he opens the ears of men and seals their instruction. There you go, right there. That's really good proof that God works in dreams. I know, it sounds crazy, but Job right here is all over it. You see that when sound sleep falls on men while they slumber in their beds, then he, God, opens the ears of men and seals their instruction. So people learning from God while asleep. Matthew 1:20. But when he had considered this, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream, saying, Joseph, son of David, do not be afraid. Take Mary as your wife, for the child who has been conceived in her is of the Holy Spirit. Which will throw you off guard a little bit. Let's be honest. I mean, seriously. All of a sudden, in a dream, you're told that you're supposed to marry someone who's pregnant because it's the Holy Spirit's son. You ever try telling that to someone? Oh, no, I didn't get my fiance pregnant. That was the Holy Spirit. Seriously. No one's going to believe you. And now the assurance that you have is from a dream, from an angel in a dream. But in this case, it's the real deal. I mean, you see here that Joseph is actually being told that in a dream, this is his proof that's the Holy Spirit, a dream. He has to rely on a dream. And Joseph actually is kind of a dreamer, because you see again, if you look at Matthew 2:13 on your sheet, now when they had gone, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, get up, take the child and his mother and flee to Egypt and remain there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to destroy him. So there you go. You've got Joseph and Mary and Jesus being spared because they had to trust in a dream. And even the verse before that, Matthew 2:12, and having been warned by God in a dream not to return to Herod, the Magi left for their own country by another way. So there you go, the Magi as well, God speaking to them to help this story and Jesus' birth along. All right, you see underneath that the power of dreams. I give you kind of just a little bit of what I've already said. You can read through that sometime, but seriously, I really do believe there's power in dreams, and it's one of the things, one of the most supernatural ways that I myself have experienced the most, and it all started just because I read a book by James W. Goel called The Dream Language, and this really got me to start thinking about dreams. I had never really put much thought into it before, but I figured if there was anything to this, and this was a trusted author, maybe I could learn about it. So I read through it, and as I read, God started giving me dreams, because I don't know, maybe he was just trying to teach me how it was that he worked in this way, or maybe he just wanted me to use dreams in my life. So either way, I want to teach it to you and see if God will use you in the same way. All right, now when you think of dreams, what's the first thing that comes to mind? What's the first Bible story? Typically, the first thing that comes to your mind is Joseph in the Old Testament. He's always thought of as a dreamer. When you mention dreams, he's the first person that comes to mind. Even at our meeting, when I said it was first person, that right there comes right up. Joseph understood that dreams are God's. In fact, everyone in the Bible understood that dreams were God. If God gives you a dream, then it's going to be his interpretation. That's the true interpretation, right? I mean, if it's from God, then he has an interpretation to it when he gives it to you. Then there is a legitimate interpretation to be found. And Joseph understood how to interpret dreams, and he relied on God to interpret those dreams. You even see, then they said to him, "We have had a dream, and there is no one to interpret it." And then Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell it to me, please." In other words, if you tell me this dream, I rely on God, and maybe God will give me an interpretation, which a lot of times in Joseph's life, you see that God does. I mean, for crying out loud, Joseph ended up in being thrown into a well and sold into slavery because of a dream that God gave him. And because of that, it totally changed his whole life, just off dreams that all his brothers were going to bow down to him, things like that. But you see some interesting dreams throughout Genesis 40 and 41 and all that story of Joseph. And if you have your PDF in front of you, you'll see that we're going to hit on some of those right now. Now, when you hear a dream, you'll notice that, yes, you need to rely on God for the interpretation. He's the one who knows exactly what it means. If it is from God, he knows what the interpretation is. There are still some ideas that you can have in your mind as to how to interpret dreams, how to work with God. I mean, it's like pursuing God. You know, you think that dreams will be the easiest way for God to reach you, because he gives you a dream, you're asleep, you don't have to be awake or anything to receive it. But then, when you wake up, it appears that you actually have to do some interpretation. You actually have to work with God, lean on God, and think through it to try to figure out what exactly that dream meant. So, here you go. Genesis 40, 8 through 13. This is a dream, and think about how it could be interpreted. This is the chief cupbearer's dream. So the chief cupbearer told his dream to Joseph and said to him, "In my dream, behold, there was a vine in front of me, and on the vine were three branches. And as it was budding, its blossoms came out, and its clusters produced ripe grapes. Now Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, so I took the grapes and squeezed them into Pharaoh's cup, and I put the cup into Pharaoh's hand." Now, you never really maybe thought about trying to translate that dream. Like, what does it mean? Because we know the interpretation. The Bible gives us the interpretation. Joseph says it straight up, which is actually great because that gives us a little lesson as to how exactly we can interpret dreams. Because it's not like God just gave this random codec, and as soon as Joseph heard it, he randomly came up with a dream completely unrelated to what the cupbearer saw. No, if you look, you actually see some similarities. You see some ways that you can think about how to interpret dreams. Remember, God is highly metaphorical, highly symbolic. Even Jesus, all his parables, he speaks in parables so people won't understand. That's what he says. So the hungry people, the hungriest of the hungry, will be searching to figure out what exactly that parable is. And that's what you see with dreams. You want to figure out what it is that God's trying to say, tell to you, then you got to think about it when you wake up. And the interpretation right here. Here's what Joseph says. Remember what the dream was. Here's Joseph's interpretation based off of what he's been told. Then Joseph said to him, "This is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. Within three more days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your office, and you will put Pharaoh's cup into his hand, according to your former custom when you were his cupbearer." Now, what similarities can you see between the dream itself and the interpretation? Think about it for a minute. Or a second, because I'm going to keep going. Unless you want to pause, then you can keep thinking. Here's some things you can see. The three branches are 3 days. Remember, they said that there was a vine with three branches, and branches grow, you know, maybe representing time. How Joseph got 3 days, I'm not entirely sure. Honestly, it seems like Joseph was really relying on God to figure out the amount of time right there, because it could have been 3 years for these branches to grow, 3 hours, 3 minutes. But Joseph knows it's 3 days. So the cupbearer has 3 days. And on top of that, remember the original dream? As it's growing, it's budding and blossoms are coming out, clusters producing ripe grapes. Okay, what's good about this? Everything, really, right? I mean, it gives this whole idea that this is a great dream. It's blossoming, color is coming, things are coming to life. Life is coming out of this branch. And on top of that, ripe grapes. Now, remember, this is a cupbearer, so he's probably making wine and whatnot from grapes or juice of some sort. So even his own line of work is in this. He's seeing life come out of these branches, and he's seeing grapes, what he uses to serve, coming out of this. On top of that, Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, he says. So he took the grapes and squeezed them into Pharaoh's cup, and he put the cup into Pharaoh's hand. So there you go. That right there kind of says things were good. I got some juice again to give to Pharaoh. In my future, it looks as though I'm serving Pharaoh again. Even that seems a bit more literal, and the first part maybe a bit more metaphorical. You put it together, you kind of learn, yeah, Joseph's interpretation, you could definitely get that from what you read. All right, Genesis 40, 16 through 19. There's another prisoner within this jail. It's the baker. And Joseph talks to the baker to find out that he also has a dream. So here you go. When the chief baker saw that he had interpreted favorably, he said to Joseph, I also saw my dream, and behold, there were three baskets of white bread on my head, and in the top basket there were some of all sorts of baked food for Pharaoh, and the birds were eating them out of the basket on my head. All right, think about it. Well, how could you possibly interpret it? Pause it if you want and think about how you can interpret it before you look at what the dream was. Or maybe you remember the dream and we can just move forward. Then Joseph answered and said, this is its interpretation. The three baskets are 3 days. Again, we've got three things representing 3 days. Within three more days, Pharaoh will lift up your head from you and will hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat your flesh off you. Okay, this dream is not pleasant. It's like the opposite of what we just read. One of them is going to live in 3 days. Another one's going to die in 3 days. But how do we get there? Again, we see three baskets of white bread on his head. And it seems, again, relying on God, that these three baskets represent 3 days. Again, not 3 minutes, not 3 hours, not 3 years, but 3 days. The top basket are all sorts of baked foods for Pharaoh. And the birds were eating them out of the basket on my head. That's what he said. So again, he's bringing food to Pharaoh. He's back in his job, it appears. But this time, there's birds eating him out of the the bread out of the basket on his head. Now, when you think about it, he's going to be hung on a tree, right? And you also see reference to his head, that he's balancing a basket on his head. And the birds are eating off the basket on his head. What you definitely see is a relation to his head, and maybe that'll help you reach kind of like a, it's been cut off, you know, he's been hung. There's from the head up, there's a lot of pain. And on top of that, you see that birds are eating the flesh off of him, just as the birds are eating the bread off of his head. You do not see life blossoming and budding. Rather, you see something completely different, that things are falling apart in his life. It's definitely not as comforting as the dream that the cupbearer had. Now, my interpretation of it, you know, I'm not exactly sure how Joseph came to it, but I do know that he relied on God for interpretation. And I would imagine that Joseph, this dreamer who's used to dreams, also understands the general idea as to how to work in this gift and translate dreams. Now, somebody brought up in our discussion time, okay, but do you think this has anything to do with Joseph knowing these people? And that's a great point. This is a great point. How did Joseph arrive at these interpretations? Did it have anything to do with the fact that he knew the cupbearer and the baker? Because Joseph was in prison, but he's favored in prison, and now he's met these other prisoners. You just get this feeling that Joseph's kind of like this friendly guy, favored guy, and that maybe his ability to find these interpretations had to do with his relationship with these people. This is a great point, because if you know someone better You know, if you know someone well and you understand their life and their struggles and their pain, it's definitely easier to interpret a dream. Now, that doesn't mean that you cannot interpret a dream of someone that you've never met before or know very little about. I believe that, you know, if we're relying on God for the interpretation, He can use us in that way. But definitely, if you're working with someone you know, you can understand it all the much easier. While relying on God and what you know of this person and how to interpret, things like that. Genesis 41, 17 through 32. Here you go. Here's another dream. And it's from Pharaoh this time. So Pharaoh spoke to Joseph, "In my dream, behold, I was standing on the bank of the Nile, and behold, seven cows, fat and sleek, came up out of the Nile. And they grazed in the marsh grass. Lo, seven other cows came up after them, poor and very ugly and gaunt, such as I had never seen for ugliness in all the land of Egypt. And the lean and ugly cows ate up the first seven fat cows. Yet when they had devoured them, it could not be detected that they had devoured them, for they were just as ugly as before. Then I awoke. I saw also in the dream, and behold, seven ears full and good came up on a single stalk, and lo, seven ears withered thin and scorched by the east wind sprouted up after them. And the thin ears swallowed the seven good ears. Then I told it to the magicians, but there was no one who could explain it to me." Magicians during this time, conjurers, sorcerers, all these counterfeit demonic people were the people that you went to figure out your interpretations. Rather than going to God, you went to demons, people who worked with spirits and demons to try to figure out what the heck your dream meant, or really anything that felt supernatural. This is who you relied on. But again, God is the one who gave this dream, and God is the one who knows the interpretation. And the magicians can't figure this out. The magicians can't explain it. But Joseph, being someone who relies on God, who relies on Yahweh, is able to figure out because he has the one true source of the interpretation. And here's Joseph's interpretation of it. But first, again, if you want to try and interpret it yourself, pause the MP3 for a minute, think about it. But if you want to keep going, here's Joseph's interpretation of what you just heard. "Now Joseph said to Pharaoh, Pharaoh's dreams are one and the same." Remember, Pharaoh had two dreams. Joseph is saying they're both the same dream. "God has told the Pharaoh what he is about to do. The seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good ears are 7 years. The dreams are one and the same. The seven lean and ugly cows that came up after them are 7 years, and the seven thin ears scorched by the east wind will be 7 years of famine. It is as I have spoken to Pharaoh. God has shown to Pharaoh what he is about to do. Behold, 7 years of great abundance are coming in all the land, and after them 7 years of famine will come, and all the abundance will be forgotten in the land of Egypt. And the famine will ravage the land, so the abundance will be unknown in the land because of the subsequent famine, for it will be very severe. Now, as for the repeating of the dream to Pharaoh twice, it means that the matter is determined by God, and God will quickly bring it about." So there you go, there's quite a bit there. But what you see is seven fat cows, right? Representing plenty of food. Because if you're fat, typically what you're thinking is that you've had a lot of food, that food is not really an issue. These cows have grazed and they have eaten all that they have wanted to. And now you've got seven cows who have not eaten anything. They're wasting away. They're ugly. There's nothing in them that they can find to nourish them. These cows come up. These things that represent ugliness and nothing, no food, come up and eat the things that represent lots of food, plenty of food. And what you get here is a representation of each cow representing a year, which again, relying on God, the seven good years are being eaten by seven bad years. Kind of meaning that the progression is right now you're about to have seven good years and then you're going to have seven bad years. Now, when you get a repetition of dreams, though, he sees it in two ways. In the same way that there's seven thin ears are scorched by the east wind, there's 7 years of famine. In other words, you had 7 good years of corn, now all of a sudden they're being washed away by 7 thin years, scorched by the east wind. Again, you know, good things are being replaced by bad things. 7 years of something good being replaced by 7 years of something bad. And Joseph, relying on God and his gift to interpret, is able to see that God is bringing in famine. He's able to interpret the dreams. But even when you look at the dreams, you see that it is possible to translate these. Not that Joseph just had this random, like, if you give him the code, all of a sudden the answer will pop into his mind. But he's able to look at a picture and figure out what the translation of it is, right? Artists, they do it all the time. They paint a picture. You got to figure out what exactly that picture meant. God, in this case, paints a movie, a vision, a dream, a picture. And Joseph is able to look at it and rely on God, work with God, to find exactly what it means. Now, Daniel, a lot of times, when you look at the book of Daniel and Nebuchadnezzar, that whole story, mostly what comes to mind is the story of Shadrach and Benny, if you will, VeggieTales fans, you know, Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego. And a lot of times we don't focus on a lot of the other stuff in that book. So now is a good time, excuse me, now is a good time to take a look, because there's actually quite a bit of dreams in Daniel. In fact, Daniel moves in dreams throughout the book. You can see different places, dreams and visions. But you see it right from the get-go. This is Daniel 2. It's the second year of reign of Nebuchadnezzar. In Daniel 2, we already see that it's focused all around dreams at this point. So I'm going to read to you quite a bit, and we're going to talk about it as we go on. Or I'm going to talk about it, and you can discuss with the computer screen or iPad or iPhone, whatever. All right. Now, the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams, and his spirit was troubled, and his sleep left him. Then the king gave orders to call in the magicians, the conjurers, the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans to tell the king his dreams. So they came in and stood before the king. Again, you see the same thing. Pharaoh called in all the magicians and whatnot to tell him what his dreams were. And here you got Daniel doing the same thing. The king said to them, "I had a dream, and my spirit is anxious to understand the dream." Then the Chaldeans spoke to the king in Aramaic. "O king, live forever. Tell the dream to your servants, and we will declare the interpretation." The king replied to the Chaldeans, "The command from me is firm. If you do not make known to me the dream and its interpretation, you will be torn limb from limb, and your houses will be made into a rubbish heap. But if you declare the dream and its interpretation, you will receive from me gifts and a reward and great honor. Therefore, declare to me the dream and its interpretation." They answered a second time and said, "Let the king tell his dream to his servants, and we will declare the interpretation." The king replied, "I know for certain that you are bargaining for time, inasmuch as you have seen that the command from me is firm, that if you do not make the dream known to me, there is only one decree for you. For you have agreed together to speak lying and corrupt words before me until the situation is changed. Therefore, tell me the dream, and I may know that you can declare to me its interpretation." The Chaldeans answered the king and said, "There is not a man on earth who could declare the matter for the king, inasmuch as no great king or ruler has ever asked anything like this of any magician, conjurer, or Chaldean. Moreover, the thing which the king demands is difficult, and there is no one else who could declare it to the king except gods, whose dwelling place is not with mortal flesh." Because of this, the king became indignant and very furious and gave orders to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. Now, there's a lot of interesting things you see in here. And here's the most interesting. Nebuchadnezzar wants, in case you're not following, Nebuchadnezzar wants all these people he relies on to interpret his dreams and do the magical things. He wants them, through their demonic sources, to tell him what he dreamt and the interpretation. In other words, he's not going to tell them his dream at all. He wants it interpreted, but he is not going to tell them what it is that he dreamt. They have to tell him what he dreamt through their sources, through their counterfeit ways, and then they have to give him the interpretation. Now, this seems like God at work right here. You can tell that maybe Nebuchadnezzar, for some reason, maybe there's some context missing, but it seems that Nebuchadnezzar does not trust his magicians, his conjurers, his sorcerers. He wants them to work their magic without him having done anything. That's kind of the feeling that you get here. But he does not tell him the dream, which almost seems like divine intervention, because we do see later that Daniel interprets this dream and that it was God who gave the dream. Because if Daniel's interpreting it, and then we know that God gave this dream to Nebuchadnezzar. And he would not have gotten a godly interpretation through demonic sources. See, that's the interesting part. It almost seems like divine intervention that Nebuchadnezzar told them that he didn't want to tell them the dream. He wanted to make sure it was authentic. He wanted to make sure it was an interpretation, that no one was lying. He wanted to make sure that this was a real deal. And you can tell that he really felt that this was a dream from God. I mean, he's a pagan king. He's just thinking that this is from the gods, not from Yahweh, not from God. But his spirit was troubled and his sleep left him. Like, this is a serious dream that he wakes up from it, from this godly dream, and he just knows that there's something different about it. Because you can imagine, I don't think he's threatening everyone's life every time he has a dream. If so, then this guy has some mood swings. And I imagine that all his magicians would have run for their life after the first time, or second or third time that he threatened their lives. But you definitely see that Nebuchadnezzar had this absolute belief in this dream. Now, Daniel is considered to Nebuchadnezzar like a wise man. So Daniel's life is at stake now, because he's grouped, even though he's a prophet of God, he's grouped in Nebuchadnezzar's mind as a magician, a conjurer, a sorcerer, because that's the way that he works. He is the voice of Yahweh, of God, while the others are the voice of demons and evil spirits. But Daniel moves in a different way, but he's grouped in the same way, because due to the culture of the time, that's just how Nebuchadnezzar sees Daniel. But Daniel, you know, you can imagine a little bit of panic. Like, I'm going to die because this guy had a dream. Nobody knows what the dream is, and I'm supposed to interpret it. Now remember, you told everyone in Joseph's line, in Joseph's story, told their dreams, and then they interpreted it, or Joseph interpreted it. In this case, Daniel doesn't know the dream, and he has to interpret it. Fortunately, the God who gave the dream also gave the God, or also is a God who gave the dream to Daniel. In other words, Daniel, being unable to know this dream, received the dream from God. God was making a story, making a way through this. So Daniel goes, and in 2:19, it says this: "Then the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a night vision. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven." So Daniel actually receives the same dream from God, which is a total supernatural thing that he would receive that. And then it goes through a few verses. Daniel is thanking God. "Thank you. I'm not going to die. You know everything. And you definitely know the interpretation of this dream," things like that. You can read through that, through 20 through 25. But then 26 through 30, Daniel 2, 26 through 30, it says this: "The king said to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, 'Are you able to make known to me the dream which I have seen and its interpretation?' Daniel answered before the king and said, 'As for the mystery about which the king has inquired, neither wise men, conjurers, magicians, nor diviners are able to declare it to the king. However, there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries, and he has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will take place in the latter days. This was your dream and the visions in your mind while on your bed. As for you, O king, while on your bed, your thoughts turn to what would take place in the future, and he who reveals mysteries has made known to you what will take place. But as for me, this mystery has not been revealed to me for any wisdom residing in me more than in any other living man, but for the purpose of making the interpretation known to the king, and that you may understand the thoughts of your mind.'" So here you go. God gives Daniel Nebuchadnezzar's dream and the interpretation. it's made clear too that God is the source of this dream, and in this particular case, it's not just some other dream, like, you know, scientific or demonic or anything, but God is the source of this dream. All right, here's your dream, and this one goes beyond Joseph's, man. This one gets weird. Here you go. You, O king, were looking, and behold, there was a single great statue. That statue, which was large and of extraordinary splendor, was standing in front of you, and its appearance was awesome. The head of the statue was made of fine gold, its breast and its arms of silver, its belly and its thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay. You continued looking until a stone was cut out without hands, and it struck the statue of his feet of iron and clay and crushed them. And the iron, the clay, and the bronze, and the silver, and the gold were crushed all at the same time, became like chaff from the summer threshing floors. And the wind carried it away, so that there was not a trace of it found. But the stone that struck the statue became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. All right, take a crack at interpreting that one, because honestly, like, that one just confuses me. Fortunately, Daniel gives the interpretation so you can grow and see how you could have interpreted this. But we talked about our discussion group, and a lot of great ideas were thrown out. Like, seriously, I was having a hard time remembering what the real interpretation was. The ideas thrown out, they learned quick. Like, I actually thought that they might be spot on. And there's things that I wouldn't have thought about. But, again, you got to rely on God, not just our abilities to interpret. Because it's obvious that God is giving the interpretation. Especially when dreams get as highly symbolic and advanced as this, you know. The more you need God to really sit down with you and say, alright, here's what this meant. So here you go. Daniel gave the dream. Now here's the interpretation. And again, just to sum up the dream, basically there's a big statue made of a bunch of different parts and materials, and then it's crushed by a rock, which becomes the a mountain which fills the entire earth. So there you go. There's your dream. Here's the interpretation. This was the dream. Now we will tell its interpretation before the king. You, O king, are the king of kings, to whom the God of heaven has given the kingdom, the power, and the strength, and the glory. And wherever the sons of men dwell, or the beasts of the field, or the birds of the sky, he has given them into your hand and has caused you to rule over them all. You are the head of gold. After you, there will arise another kingdom inferior to you, then another third kingdom of bronze, which will rule all over the earth. Then there will be a fourth kingdom as strong as iron, inasmuch as iron crushes and shatters all things. So like iron that breaks into pieces, it will crush and break all these in pieces. In that you saw the feet and toes partly of potter's clay and partly of iron, it will be a divided kingdom, but it will have in it the toughness of iron, inasmuch as you saw the iron mixed with common clay. As the toes of the feet were partly of iron and partly of pottery, so some of the kingdom will be strong and part of it will be brittle. And in that you saw the iron mixed with common clay, they will combine with one another in the seed of men, and they will not adhere to one another, even as iron does not combine with pottery. In the days of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which will never be destroyed, and that kingdom will not be left for another people. It will crush and put an end to all these kingdoms, but it will itself endure forever. And as much as you saw that a stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it crushed the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God has made known to the king that will take place in the future. So the dream is true, and its interpretation is trustworthy. Now, you actually see a huge stretch of futuristic dreaming here. Not all dreams are futuristic. Sometimes they relate to just your present life, or sometimes they look all the way into the future, or just a little bit into the future. What you see here is starting from the present. All right, you're the king right now. You represent the head of gold. In the future, this kingdom will represent this part of the statue. After that, this part of the statue represents this kingdom. After that, this. And then, all of a sudden, we jump pretty much past where we are now, right? Year 2011, we go past that, and what we see all of a sudden is God's kingdom. The final kingdom. Like, we look so far past that, that Nebuchadnezzar gets to see what's coming. On top of that, you see the authenticity of God's kingdom because you see that this dream was given to both of them without being told between the two. This dream's given to Daniel. He's able to interpret it. They both get a chance to see God's kingdom, even beyond where we are now. They get that chance. So as you read this dream and its interpretation, you get the feeling that there really is something supernatural about it, right? I mean, if you were to dream this dream, when you woke up, you might think it's really bizarre. But now that you're starting to wonder if dreams could be supernatural, if God could give dreams, now that you're starting to wonder about that, you start to wonder, if you had this dream and you woke up and your spirit's troubled because of it, could dreams come from God? Could they be supernatural? Could they actually mean something? When you start seeing clay and pottery and gold, and all of a sudden it's like, wow, this is just so bizarre. It seems like these things beckon for an interpretation. Of course, your brain does sort out things. Not all dreams are supernatural. But there definitely is a supernatural dreaming element, both godly and demonic. And that's what we're going to talk about now. I want to help you try to interpret what's what. Discern. Because discernment is huge when it comes to dreams. Because there's about three kinds of dreams. There's dreams from God. There's natural dreams, just the science that you understand most. And then there's demonic dreams. Now, natural dreams you're probably pretty familiar with. I've looked throughout my life and actually I found quite a few. So here's some just to lighten the mood. These are some interesting, odd dreams I had. One morning, just a few days ago actually, I woke up and spent some time with David Crowder, musician in the band. He was a pretty chill guy, and he was playing one of his new songs for me. Now, pretty sure that this was just a natural dream, but if the new CD comes out and that song's on it, then maybe, who knows? But no, that's not going to happen. In fact, I don't really remember what the song sounded like. But another dream, Scott Bakula. Yeah, he's the guy from Quantum Leap. If you've ever seen that awesome old sci-fi TV show, he was a drummer in my praise band at church, which, of course, you know is epic. Another time, The Fray was my church worship band. They were also awesome. Another time, Jody made me work at her hair salon, my wife. She made me work at her hair salon and cut people's hair, but she wouldn't give me any tools to cut anyone's hair. And then David Hewlett from Stargate Atlantis. I watch a lot of sci-fi TV shows. he came in, and I couldn't cut his hair, and I think he was getting mad at me, and I was feeling bad. Another time, I made an amazing app for the iPhone, and this one, you know, you got Angry Birds. I made the greatest app since Angry Birds. It was all based around a refrigerator. That's right. You know it's awesome. Another time, my friend Casey Mellinger took a train to go to Texas to help deliver a baby. He also took my mother to help him for some reason. Another time, I walked into Target, and Target was being quarantined because the Joker from Batman was there, and he was trying to kill me. I blacked out. But when I woke up, I saved Batman, so that was cool. And then here's one of my personal favorite dreams. Alec Baldwin's pants turned everyone at Walmart into zombies. I'm pretty sure that one falls under natural dreams, but it definitely made for an interesting time. So there you go. Those are some natural dreams that I have had, and maybe you're already relating in your head. You know what? I've had a lot of really screwed up natural dreams, and those are definitely similar. Or maybe not. Maybe you don't dream about Alec Baldwin's pants. Either way. Okay, now that you've seen natural dreams, I want to show you what dreams from God look like, because these are huge. When you have a dream from God, when you receive a message directly from Him and you wake up and you have to interpret it, it really it means a lot to you. It really makes you just really value this supernatural gift, this supernatural power, rather than just consider dreams to be what insane and whatnot. And here's really the first dream I had. I mentioned earlier I was reading a book called The Dream Language by James W. Goel, which he also wrote with his wife, Michal Ann Goel. They wrote a book together. I was reading it, and it seemed like God started to work in my life to show me, here's what you're reading. let me show you how it works. And this was the first dream that I felt I'd had that was really interpretive. Let me explain it to you, and then maybe you can pause and think about how you might translate it. Because Stephen, actually, was at our meeting, and he interpreted it pretty much right on the dot. I explained it, and he hit it. So see what you can do with this. All right, now there was this tiny little spider. I was staring at a mirror, and then the spider came crawling across it, and all my focus all of a sudden was on that little spider. And it was driving me crazy. I really wanted to kill it. I didn't want to touch it, so I was looking for scissors so I could cut this spider in half. I know, it sounds gruesome, but I didn't want to touch it with my hands. I just wanted to cut it in half. So I was trying to approach it, but I couldn't find any scissors, so instead I just let it, tried to ignore it. Now it's walking around the room, and it's finally I decide to try to kill it again, and I chase it into the middle of the room. Finally, I catch it inside of a container. As soon as I get it inside the container, three candles pop up, catch on fire, and just burn away this spider. Like, kill it completely. It's gone. All right, take a moment, pause, and see what you can make of that. And in case you've unpaused now, I'll explain it, or if you're just still listening to me talk. Here's my interpretation. Is this. I was staring in a mirror because I was looking at myself, but when I looked at myself, all I could see was this ugliness, this sin, this spider, and the spider represented sin, and I'm staring at it, and it's ugly, and I hate it. You know, I've got this giant mirror of myself, but all I can focus on is this tiny little spider making its way across it. Now, I want to kill it. I don't want sin in my life, so I try to find the most brutal way I can to get rid of it, which in this case, I just grab some scissors and try to cut it in half, but I can't. I can't even find the scissors to do it. So I decide instead that I'm going to ignore it. I'm not even going to touch it. I'm not going to get near it. I'm just going to leave it alone, and it's going to just not even be a part of my life, not even take my attention. But that doesn't work. Eventually, my attention is back on it again. I chase it to the middle of the room, and I try to contain it in a container. You know, I try to give it over to God. I don't really know what exactly. I know I want to give it to God. I know that much. All I know is that when I trap it in this container, three candles pop up. Now, a lot of times, fire actually represents the Holy Spirit. Like, that's a common interpretation of fire. Not that common interpretations always have to be it, but in this case, I've got three candles. So I've got definitely right here, Father, Son, Holy Ghost. They pop up and they just burn away the sin completely to an oblivion. And it's supernatural on top of that. You know, the other things seem fairly natural, staring in a mirror, looking at a spider. In this case, I capture it in a container, also natural. Three candles pop up and burn it away. They even catch on fire supernaturally. What you see here is God trying to tell me, this is what I believe, God trying to tell me, look, when you see yourself, all you ever see is your sin. You hate your sin, but you cannot get rid of it. You have to trust in me to do that. In all of my supernatural ways, I can get rid of it. And God pops up, and he just vanishes it, deletes it. It's gone. It's out of there. And this is God at work within my life in this way, trying to show me, look what I can do. Look at the power that is in me. Now, yeah, God may work in your life in natural ways to get rid of sin, but in this case, he's showing me that he is the answer. And this was all, like, really applied to my life. I mean, when I've struggled with sin and it's been so much on my mind, I've just been unable to even look at myself, even being able to hear God's voice, because all my focus is on the sin, and I think that somehow in my power, I have to get rid of it. And God may show me ways to get out of sin or correct sin, or he may show me to go back and apologize to someone or forgive something, things like that, but he's showing me that he is the one who gets rid of it in his supernatural ways. I've had other dreams too, and this isn't in your pamphlet. These are dreams that I shared the other day, and I'll share a few just with you. this is one dream that I actually had a hard time trying to figure out if it was from God or not. But when I look at it, when I try to translate it, I really do see that there is a God interpretation to this. And you'll find a lot of times some of the realest God dreams that you've been given, or even in your life, some of the realest God moments you've had. When you look back at those moments, sometimes you question them. You wonder if it was really God. You've got to hold true. You've got to just, sometimes you just got to believe so that you can really, really know. Can you think about it in your own life? Back in the day, maybe you had a God experience, and now today you wonder if that was just emotion, things like that. When you have dreams and you really feel that they're from God, try to just hold true to that, especially if it has God just, you know, written all over it. In this case, I'm staring at a book, right? And I actually know there's a picture of a girl on this book. If I can remember right, it's just kind of like a little dancing girl or something. And I do believe that I have seen this girl come to life before, that she has like come out of this book and she's been alive. And I believe this. And I'm with a bunch of friends at the time that I'm looking at this book. And I'm like, guys, this thing is alive. I have seen this thing alive before. And they're all laughing at me like, yeah, okay, whatever, man. I'm like, no, seriously, I have seen this thing alive. I'm going to provoke it to life right now. And I actually start like yelling at the book like, come to life. It's okay, you can come out. I know that you're real. I know that you're alive. It's all right. Come back. Come back to life right now. And as I'm doing this, it starts to come alive and kind of come out of the book cover, the girl, and starts kind of dancing around the room. If I remember, it was dancing. Either way, it was coming to life in some way. And she just came out of the cover, and that's what I saw right there in that dream. All my friends were like, wow, did you last time that this happened, did you feel like this was did you know it was going to come to life last time you tried to provoke it to life? And I'm just like, yeah, I did, but I actually didn't. when I told them that, I felt like I was kind of trying to make myself look good in the dream. But either way, you definitely see in this dream myself trying to provoke a book to life. For me, that this book, when I woke up, I realized that this book would be the Bible, that I've seen the Bible come to life before. I've seen the Bible really have depth and complete life, so much that the Spirit moves in mysterious ways, if you will, to quote U2, which is actually a song about the Holy Spirit. And you see that this book kind of came to life because I provoked it, and nobody believed that there was any life to this, but I provoked it to come back to life. And really, that's a big thing in my life, that it may not always happen. Maybe you've heard my sermons and maybe they felt dry or something. But for me, a big part of my life has been, I really want to teach. I want to make the Bible come to life, because I now know that there is some real depth, some real life to it. And I think a lot of people have not seen it. So for me, that's like provoking a Bible to life, maybe to give me a calling to that, or maybe just to make me understand that I should be doing that. Here you go. Here's another one. This one was really interesting, because it wasn't one I was really thinking was maybe super from God. It really felt kind of natural. And sometimes, from what I can tell, sometimes it feels like your dreams actually can be natural and then progress into the supernatural. I'm not entirely sure about that, but I've had like the end of some natural dreams that all of a sudden just seem supernatural. So pay attention, even if the dream feels like it may not mean anything, but then all of a sudden it changes and there's a part. Pay attention to that, because that may very well be God making his way into a dream. In this case, I was trying to free people from a prison. Now, the setting of this dream is very brown. It even seems kind of dead, like just dirt everywhere, and I'm trying to free people from a prison. These aren't necessarily bad people. They've just kind of been captured and stuck in there. I'm trying to get them out, and I'm actually helping them get out of the prison. And then all of a sudden, as I'm trying to help them escape, someone points at the stars and says, "That's you." Which was kind of an odd moment in the dream, almost kind of interrupted it, like, wait, the heck was that all about? Did that mean something? Like, I was just dreaming. Like, this is one of those dreams that felt like it went on for an hour, you know, one of those. Later, Later on in the dream, I'm with a child, like in a cornfield or something like that, and the kid just points to towards the stars and says, "That's you." Now, there's been some time in this dream between the first moment and the second moment, and I'm just like, I look at the kid and I actually say, "Why do people keep saying that?" Like, I say this in the dream, and he looks back at me and actually says, "Because you're from another land." Now, this is where this dream kind of, like, you know, that gave me shivers right now. Just like, all of a sudden, something in this dream has changed. I'm helping people break out of a prison, which, you know, at least as a pastor, a big part of my calling is to try to help people out of their corruptedness, out of their bonds, out of their pain and hurt, out of the things that keep them trapped. So you can definitely see that within the prison analogy. But then the thing that really stuck out to me, people pointing at stars and being like, "That's you." And the fact that it happened twice, when you see a repetitious theme in a dream or you have the same dream more than once, that's usually something calling out saying, "Pay attention, listen to me." And in this case, that's definitely what that was. Because when I asked him, like, I'm surprised he gave me an answer. I feel like God actually was giving me an interpretation for the dream. Point towards the stars, "That's you. Look back at me, why?" And then, "Because you're from another land." As in, you're from the kingdom of heaven. Or you shine like stars in the heavens. You are not from here. You're helping people break out, like, in this dirty atmosphere, this brown land of people stuck in prisons. You're living as though you don't even live on this earth. That you're living as though you don't even, you're nothing like the rest of us. You're from another land. You're from the kingdom of heaven. You shine like stars in the universe, as Philippians says. Like, that's the interesting image you get here. And that dream, like, definitely spoke to me in that moment. But it's a dream that goes out to all Christians too, to say, "That's you. You're called to free people from bondage. You're called to shine like stars. You're called to live in the kingdom of heaven, so that when people see you, they don't even understand how you could possibly be from earth, because you live so differently from everyone else." That's what that dream was. And that dream just called out for me. Another time, I actually felt like I had a dream from God that was for someone else, which you see kind of in the case of Daniel, right? He's given a dream for someone else. Even Joseph, the dreams that he gave, the interpretations he gave, they affected other people. And I was praying one night, "God, give me a dream that affects someone outside of me." Because to this point, I had always kind of been focused on God gives dreams for me to think about, dreams for myself. And after I was reading Joseph one night, I was like, "God, give me a dream that actually affects other people." And I'm pretty sure it was the next morning that I woke up with a dream just of one of my friends who was really depressed a long time ago. And in this case, in the dream, he was kind of suffering from depression again. And when I made contact with this person, all of a sudden I found out that they were having quite a hard time, just with a lot of stuff falling apart in their life. And it wasn't as serious as before, but it definitely seemed like God was trying to connect me with them. And the reason I could see that was like God wanting to say, "Look, I love you." Like, I don't know where this guy was in his walk anymore, but or if he believed in God or Jesus or anything, but God definitely pulled me out of my life to enter into his life to say, "God loves you." He gave me a dream just to talk to you about this. So you can see that God even uses the dreams he gives you to affect other people. Now here's the third category, demonic dreams. In my own life, I may have experienced one or two, but it was interesting. The one that comes to mind is there's like a green-faced version of me in a prison cell, which was like a demon version of me, and I actually wasn't afraid of it in the dream. Which makes me wonder if this was a dream from demons, because I was not afraid at all. Like, this dream didn't make me scared. I was actually trying to cast this demon out the whole time. I just trying to get rid of this green version of myself, this bad version of myself, and trusting in the power of the Holy Spirit that I could cast it out. Like, so there's kind of something from my life. But demonic dreams, I've seen them in someone else's life. I heard someone in class talk about a repetitive dream that they'd have. And whenever you have repetitive dreams, again, they scream, "Listen to me." In this case, it was demons screaming, "Listen to me," right? They were trying to make something stop from happening. Now, God can give you repetitive dreams too. You've got to discern who it's from, what the source is. In this case, but repetitive dreams, though, they really are something you want to pay attention to. Especially if it's demons, because if it is something that Satan's trying to say, you do not want to believe in it. In this case, I think this person may have been tricked into believing it. Because here, I'll give you the dream. Basically, there was a relative of hers, and in some sense in the dream, she was being told that this person would never be saved. I don't know if she was just hearing voices in the dream saying she'd never be saved, or if they were hearing, or if people like in the dream, characters in the dream, were just telling her they'd never be saved. I'm not entirely sure what the deal was, but that is not a message from God saying that someone's not going to be saved. That is not the Holy Spirit at work in your dream life. And maybe this person had actually started to believe that. Maybe she thought that it was just a way of God saying, "Look, this is just one of those things I, as God, cannot explain to you, but this person will not be saved." It seemed as though she'd been tricked maybe into believing that. But after she told me this dream, I asked, "Was this dream black and white?" And she actually, she's like, "Yeah, actually, I think it is," which is usually a good explanation. Remember, God is full of life and makes things bloom. Now, God's dreams may not always be colorful, but they tend to be a bit more vibrant. In fact, I've recorded some dreams down that I don't even know if they have an interpretation, but they were so vibrant that I just felt like it must have been from God. Like, colorful. Dreams from God tend to be colorful. Dreams from demons are not full of life. They tend to be black and white. They tend to be just full of darkness and death. So if you have a dream that's black and white, pay more attention to the idea that it may not be from God. Now, remember that one dream I just told you, though? It was brownish. Like, that felt more like an analogy that I was in a brown world, but I'm from another place, a place of colors, things like that. But I asked her that to find out if this might be demonic, because that's really what it sounded like. I then told her that if anything, demons would probably be giving her this dream because this person, it would be dangerous for them to be saved. Like, God desires men, all men, to be saved. I agree with John Wesley on that. But in this case, like, I think the demons are trying to stop her from getting someone saved because it would be dangerous to the kingdom of hell if this person was saved. Like, it seems as though, like, maybe God had some kind of, like, some future on this person he's waiting to unleash, but the demons are trying to hold it back from happening. And if the demons are giving her this particular dream, then maybe she's the biggest source that can actually free this person, because the demons need to try to stop her, try to make her believe in lies so that she won't even try. So that's what I told her. And then I actually gave her my book on dreams so that she could take it and read it. So those are some descriptions of natural dreams, of supernatural dreams, both godly and demonic. Now, you always need to rely on God when you have a dream from him. You need to rely on him for discernment as to if it's natural, godly, or demonic. Or you also need to just rely on him for the interpretation. Remember, if he gives the dream, he has an interpretation for it. If it's just a natural dream, maybe your brain has several interpretations. But if it's from God, he's given it to you with a purpose that you would figure out what it means. So rely on him for the interpretation because he's the only one who knows. But on top of that, there are some things that you can rely on within the dream to help yourself work with God and interpret it. Remember, he gives it to you, but you still got to pursue him by trying to figure out what it is, what that parable, that night parable, means. So here's some things to pay attention to in dreams. Color. As I mentioned earlier, color is definitely something you want to pay attention to. If the dream's more vibrant, it's more likely to be from God. If it's really black and white, it's more likely to be from Satan. That's not always the case, but it can vary. Again, I gave that example of the brown dream, but it was still from God. It was kind of ugly looking, but it was still from God. But you kind of see through color where its source is more likely from. On top of that, you also see colors in the dream. If there's a color that sticks out beyond anything else, pay attention to that. I mean, colors are representative. I mean, even today, when you see colors, you automatically think of what they represent. You've got moods, because colors set cool and warm moods, because they represent things. Or even mood rings. I mean, sure, those don't work, but the idea is that the colors would represent something about how you're feeling at the time. So if there's a color that sticks out, keep it in mind, write it down. You're going to want to remember what that color is. And if it's more colorful, then it's more likely to be blooming with life from God. Key people. If you have key people, if there's characters in your dream that represent something in your life, remember that. Because sometimes that's a big deal. Like, say you have a mentor, and you dream, in your dream, this mentor is in this dream, and they tell you something. Well, maybe that's because they're giving you advice, that God's using an image of someone you know to represent that thing. He's a mentor. Here's some advice from your mentor. Or maybe it's a father. Maybe your father comes to tell you something. Or maybe you're about to become the father of something. You know, like, you got to look at various interpretations. On top of that, maybe it's a baby. That's something today. But say you have a baby, like that kind of reacts as you're about to give birth to something. That's actually a common interpretation. You're pregnant in a dream. Maybe it's natural. Maybe you actually are pregnant and your brain figured it out before you did. Or maybe God's saying, hey, you're about to give birth to something. I think I had a dream where I was pregnant once. I don't, that's kind of awkward, but I think it could have been a dream as to I was going to give birth to something, or maybe I just had some really bad ice cream. But key people, characters, what do they mean to you? What do they mean just in general? Babies, fathers, mothers, things like that. Numbers, if you see numbers in your dream, try to remember it, because numbers are something that can be very important to remember when you wake up. Not like it's going to be somebody's security code or something like that, but I've actually had a dream where there was numbers, and I came to find that it was kind of like trying to refer me to something biblical. And it's actually quite a funny story, because when we were meeting the other day, I pulled it up in my journal and just kind of read it out loud, and I had actually forgotten that all that had happened, or that there was more to the story than just what I said. So let me read it to you, because it's quite interesting and it caught me off guard. See, this is the thing. When you record dreams, when you go back to them, they catch you off guard and you're like, wow, I dreamt that? So here you go. I was praying last night that God would help me wake up early and meet with him and give me dreams and stuff like that. I think he might have answered my prayer. I swear I woke up and paused a video on my computer because it was loud. I figured this was my alarm, but when my cell phone didn't go off 5 minutes later, I checked it and realized I was an hour early. I had no alarm set for this time, and my cell phone hadn't gone off, so what did I hear? I ended up going back to bed, and I just woke up with the time 6:36 in my head, which I think is around the time I woke up the first time. I have no idea what was going on, but I think it might be possible that was supernatural. I need to figure out if this is a Bible verse or something. So again, I went to bed, but when I woke up, like 6:36 was in my head, which may have been the time that I woke up originally, and I'm not even sure why I woke up at that time. And so in order to figure out what 6:36 was, I'm just like, I'll just open Isaiah 6:36, see what, or 63:6. Isaiah 63:6, I'll see if that means anything. So I open it up, and here's what it says. I trod down the peoples in my anger. I made them drunk in my wrath, and I poured out their lifeblood on the earth. And so I'm like, God, I hope that's not what you were trying to tell me, because that's just not pleasant at all. So I kind of start putting it behind me at this point, like, eh, it probably meant nothing. But I went to a prayer group that morning, and during this time I turned to Psalms 63:6, and here's what I read. When I remember you on my bed, I meditate on you in the night watches. It's short, but it's significant. Remember how I started this journal entry? I was praying last night that God would help me wake up early and meet with him, give me dreams and stuff like that. All of a sudden, I find this verse that kind of affirms that that's my desire. When I remember you on my bed, I meditate on you in the night watches. That was me meditating on God at night, asking him to give me dreams and wake me up early. All of a sudden, he wakes me up early with a verse that really points to this is what you wished for. Almost as if to say, here's what I sound like. I just want to show you that this is what I sound like. So if you wake up with a number, pay attention to it, because this is what I sound like. So there you go. That's the moment that I was having right there. And numbers that were important to me. And that's why I really tell you, if you have numbers in your head, pay attention to it. It may mean something. Symbols, of course, mean something. Dreams are highly metaphorical, highly symbolic. You've seen that in Daniel and Joseph's life already through the examples we looked at. You got to be able to look at it. Parables, the same way. Jesus told them as kind of as riddles, so only the really, really hungry will find out. He says he said it so that people wouldn't figure it out. But when God gives you a dream, it's like if you really want to know, pursue him. Pay attention to the symbols. See what they mean. So if you see candles or spiders like I saw in my dream, pay attention because they might mean something. Reoccurring dreams, as I said again, they yell, they scream, listen to me, listen to me, listen to me, listen to me. Now, in that one case of the reoccurring dream, that was a demonic one, trying to yell, listen to me, I'm trying to tell you something. In this case, it was something they shouldn't have been listening to. But God does it. When he gives recurring dreams, they also yell, listen to me. And they actually mean, yeah, listen to me. This is good. This is something you need to know. Dreams for others. I told you about that one dream I had for a friend in the same way that Daniel interpreted dreams for other people and Joseph interpreted dreams for other people. You can dream for others. The thing is, then you got to be brave and you got to step out and you got to send that strange email to someone you haven't talked to in forever, like I had to do, and try to explain to them that you dreamt about them. Like, that's what I did, and it actually, fortunately, it seemed as though the dream was right on in that case. Otherwise, I would have looked really, really crazy, even though I already did, but could have looked beyond crazy. Dreams for yourself. God gives dreams for yourself. One tip I would give you, though, you don't always have to tell your dreams to everyone. When you get a dream for yourself from God, it's very exciting and you really want to go and just tell everyone. You can do that, but I started to realize, like, I would write some of these on my blog in hopes to show people how to interpret dreams when maybe I should have just kept these particular dreams to myself. Keep it to yourself. If you do tell other people, just, you know, be careful that you're not making it seem like you're trying to make them envious or jealous. It's very dangerous to become jealous about other gifts. If you work in dreams, that's great, but if other people really desire that and they become jealous of you, it's really going to hurt their progression in their Christian walk and their progression into the supernatural. It's like me. I've always wanted to operate in visions and prophecy. Like, that's just something I've always really wanted to see, the weird things that Ezekiel saw. I've gone through phases where I've envied that of other people because I've really wanted to have that. And they seem to get visions all the time and I just never get them. That's something that I've found that when I envy, like, all of a sudden I don't trust them anymore, I don't listen to them. And there is a certain, you know, you need to be careful around people, you need to test their visions and prophecies and whatnot. But at the same time, you need to be very careful that you don't become jealous or envious. God makes us each unique and he works in us in different, unique, and individual ways. And when you allow God to treat you uniquely, you get to find that God really gets to work in you more strongly in the ways that He has gifted you. Now, if you're hungry for something like me, hungry for prophecy and visions, that's okay. You're welcome to be hungry to it. You're welcome to continually ask God for it. Maybe He'll give it to you once. Maybe He'll give it to you after a long time of pleading with Him. Maybe you'll just never see it. I don't know. But I've seen some of the most supernatural people I've ever known be unable to work in dreams. Like, not everyone is just gifted at everything. You know, God works in us individually. Then there's also future and present dreams. You need to be able to discern what is something that is about, like, way in the future, and you need to be able to discern what's something for that present moment right then. Especially, there's, like, sometimes people get dreams about the future, and they know that God does not want them to reveal that until a certain time. It's like their secret between them and God until God releases them to be able to say it out loud to other people. So there are future and present dreams, and you need to be able to discern between them. If you really want to learn more about dreams, getting towards the end here, I want you to check out the book The Dream Language, again by James W. Goel and his wife, Michal Ann. Like, seriously, this book is what propelled me into it, really helped me learn. And actually, everything I've taught you today has been taken out of biblical context, my own life experience, and his teaching, especially what to pay attention to. This book is amazing, and if you think my stories and dreams are weird, you gotta see some of the things that God has given him. All right. As we get to the end, I just want to remind you, you need to rely on God. Yes, there are things that can help you interpret, but you need to rely on Him. He is the source, and He is the interpretation. If you don't rely on Him, if you try to work in it too much in yourself, you're going to find yourself tracking in the wrong direction. And then also, keep a dream journal. Again, if you want to work in dreams, you may be asleep, but you still got to pursue God. If you have any idea how hard it is to wake up at like 4 a.m. from a dream you felt was from God and try to write it down, it is hard. Nobody likes to do it, especially when you're trying to write it on something technological and it's blinding you in the face because the screen's so bright. Like, seriously, keep a journal at your side, whether it's an iPad or a notebook. But when you wake up, you need to write it down right then. I've had dreams that I thought were from God, and I was like, oh, this was so powerful. I think I'll remember it later if I just go back to bed and write it down later. I wake up, and what I do write down is either non-existent anymore because I didn't write it down when I woke up, or it's just too late, and I can't remember much of anything, or what I can remember is skewed and changed and things like that. So rely on God and keep a dream journal. See if you can actually find anything throughout your weeks. I want you to pay attention. I want you to be hungry for it. I want you to ask for it and see how God works. Don't be envious of other people if He doesn't give it to you, but keep being persistent. If it's something you really want, keep being persistent. It's like that kind of with all spiritual gifts. If God gives you something, be grateful. Ask for it again. But if He doesn't work in you in that way and you really want it, you can keep asking. It's all right. He'll listen. And maybe He'll give it to you, or maybe He'll work in your life in other ways. So that is Unlocking the Biblical Power of Night Visions. Thank you for listening. And I hope you are having a wonderful day. My throat, it's very dry now from talking for an hour and 19 minutes straight, so I'm going to go get a drink of Mountain Dew, and I will catch you again on Apollos next week. Sorry, this one was late this week. I've been at a conference. I'll usually try to have the podcast and PDFs uploaded by Tuesdays, and if you don't know where the PDF is, you can always download it off of www.apollos.com. newfangled.wordpress.com. newfangled.wordpress.com. Then just search on the search bar on the left, Apollos, and you'll find all the Apollos PDFs and MP3s, among much more. All right. Have a wonderful day.